and culture, remember to check out our website at wordsandculture.ca, where you can find language apps and start your own language journey. Écossais, be well, keep smiling.
Words and Culture is made possible with funding from SiriusXM through the Community Radio Fund of Canada. Words and Culture is produced by Kim Wheeler. Kaylin Belair is our audio engineer and editor.
Onigiwahi.
Gigawabamin. Soko seni denit e. Minen yuji hina.
Écossais.
Kakuhutau. We'll see you again.
Thank you.
Bird Note. I'm Lola Neal, and I'm a neuroscientist. We've all heard the term bird brain, a pejorative phrase meant to describe a person as stupid or foolish. But in neuroscience, birds are used as models to study many neural processes, as they have cognitive abilities comparable to those of the cleverest mammals. Birds have exhibited surprisingly complex behaviors that pique the interest of scientists. Pigeons can be trained to complete tasks, corvids like ravens and crows appear to experience self-awareness, and songbirds use syllabic songs to communicate with each other. Studying vocal learning and imitation in songbirds like zebra finches has helped researchers explore how language is acquired, an important topic in human infant development and beyond. Much like how an infant's babbling becomes simple sounds and words, which then becomes complex language in children and adults, juvenile songbirds learn the songs of their parents with syllables as a building block. Over time, these syllables can then be rearranged if needed, for example, to imitate another sound they hear. Scientists are working to understand how avian brains process, remember, and reproduce vocalizations. Not only will this information help scientists and the public understand the complexities of bird behavior, it even creates opportunities to better understand human language development and acquisition. The underestimated bird's brain is an incredibly powerful tool for neuroscientists and has given us insights that connect humans and birds in new and exciting ways.
Are you interested in learning more about sustainability or trying different plant-based foods at the largest plant-based event in North America? Come on down to the Vancouver Convention Center West Building between 10 a.m. and 5 p.m. on June 1st and June 2nd to get free voices in the plant-based movement speak on stage. Kids under 12 get a free pass. If you want to learn more, head over to www.plantedlife.com/PlantedExpoVancouver2024.
Six Nations of the Grand River Development Corporation, or SNGRDC, have secured three contracts to become 50% partners in three new battery storage facilities that are set to be constructed in the surrounding area. Ontario's Independent Electricity System Operator announced the procurement of 10 battery storage facilities throughout the province on May 9th, and SNGRDC will become partners in the Aurora Battery Energy Storage System and the Headley Battery Energy Storage System, both with APA Power, and will also become a partner in the Oxford Battery Energy Storage Project with Boralex Inc. SNGRDC stated in a May 9th media release that when these new projects are constructed, SNGRDC's energy portfolio will grow to over 1 gigawatt of energy storage, making SNGRDC the largest Indigenous holder of energy storage in North America. CEO Matt Jamieson spoke on securing the partnerships for the three new projects during the annual general meeting for 2024.
And most recently, we announced that we won three contracts through those bids. So we're going to be building more energy storage projects in and around the region. So very exciting stuff. That'll put Six Nations as the single largest energy storage developer investor in North America, which is something we should be proud of.
Additionally, Jamieson also spoke on the impact these projects will have on the Six Nations community in the May 9th media release, saying, quote, "We have worked tirelessly to build our reputation in Ontario's energy market as a progressive Indigenous community that is willing to invest in a cleaner future. Along the way, we've developed the experience and partnerships needed to ensure the energy market is fully inclusive of meaningful Indigenous participation. Our investment in energy storage will not only reduce Ontario's reliance on fossil fuels, but will also generate significant economic returns for the Six Nations community," end quote. Jamieson detailed future plans that the Development Corporation are currently exploring surrounding the Hagersville Battery Storage Project.
We are also finalizing our ownership interest in the Hagersville Battery Project, which is another energy storage project just outside of Hagersville, where we have an economic interest. And that project is supposed to come online in December of 2025.
These moves by SNGRDC into the energy sector all follow the organization's 2023 announcement that SNGRDC would become 50-50 partners in the Oneida Energy Storage Project in Haldimand County, which is the largest of its kind in Canada. Jamieson stated during the 2024 annual general meeting that construction on the Oneida Energy Storage Project has begun.
Another development activity highlight is we commenced construction on the Oneida Energy Storage Project, which is down near Nanticoke, the largest energy storage project in Canada. And
I think it's third largest in the world. And we are an owner of that project. And A6N was instrumental in actually carrying out the construction. That's an example of our thinking in terms of how we are approaching business, not just as an investor in some cases, but actually to be a developer, a constructor. And someday, with the right skill sets and investment, we want to be the operators of these things. And that's how you create real economic development for the community.
SNGRDC says throughout the development phase of these new projects, a Six Nations community investment review period will take place, and community engagement sessions will be held to gain input from community members and provide more information on the projects.
The BC government amended the Municipalities Enabling and Validating Act to ensure the City of Vancouver could control the rental rates for privately owned single residency occupancy buildings. By interceding in this legal battle between the City of Vancouver and landlords, they have protected the inventory of available units for those with low income. While most rentals will see a rise in rental rates between tenants, vacancy control imposes any rate increases to the unit and not the tenant. In 2021, the city attempted to prevent these dramatic rental increases by passing a bylaw, which was struck down in 2022 in a lawsuit by landlords of private SROs. The city appealed this ruling in 2023, but lost. In response, the province of BC has stepped in. To witness this historic moment, members of the Downtown Eastside traveled to Victoria. Isra Bloom, Side SRO Collaborative, talked with us about the significance of this amendment, their trip, and what it was going to mean to the Downtown Eastside going forward. Isra, what is vacancy control in the SROs of the Downtown Eastside protecting, and why is it important?
Yeah, so because SRO tenants are, it's harder for them to self-advocate. The amounts that the landlords can jack up the rent is a lot higher. Ones that are renting out for $500, there's ones that are renting out for $700. And we're seeing the gentrified buildings where people have been evicted, they're renting them out for $1,000, $1,200, even $2,000 at the Lotus. There's units. Market pressure, they'll just wait till someone moves out and they'll jack the rent up.
So when they jack the rent up, then my understanding of that is that we start losing low-income housing for people are on the bottom end of income.
Yeah, it's just not accessible to people anymore. So, you know, there's about 3,700 privately owned SRO units. So it's a huge percentage of Vancouver's low-income housing is tied up in these units.
Right.
You know, another half of the SROs, approximately another 3,000 or 4,000 units, are publicly owned by the government or by nonprofits. The rent is controlled. Typically, it's locked at the shelter rate, at the welfare rate. But the privately owned buildings, the province, the city, the community, the Downtown Eastside still rely on those buildings. There's still thousands of people who are on welfare or are just very low income, or our pensioners are on disability, and the city needs these units to be available for low-income people.
You and others from the Downtown Eastside traveled to Victoria on May 15th. What was the purpose of your trip?
To show support for the legislation and to make sure that the tenants, they were there for what's hopefully the last word on vacancy control for the SROs. And we wanted to make sure that the people who had been involved from the very beginning had the opportunity to participate.
What did the province do?
It's just co-signing the City of Vancouver's bylaw, the vacancy control bylaw. The bylaw is what protects the SRO tenants from these evictions and from the rent being jacked up, and takes away the incentive for the landlords to make money off of these evictions. Right. And so it'll keep a lot of people in their units. And yeah, the court struck it down twice, most recently in February, like you said. The reason they struck it down is because a close reading of the Vancouver Charter, they decided that there's a section of the Vancouver Charter that says that the city doesn't have jurisdiction to do this particular bylaw. The province is just giving the city this particular bylaw.
So when does this take effect? Is it immediate?
Yeah, it's back up. It's in effect as of right now. And we are excited to, yeah, see it being enforced. And our next step is to make sure that tenants know and the community knows that these protections exist again, because you can have the best legislation in the world, and if it's not enforced and if it's not public knowledge and no one can avail themselves of the protection they have, it's not going to be very effective. Yeah.
Do you have any idea how many units were lost in between February and now?
I don't know exactly. Wendy Peterson, our executive director, estimated yesterday. I was chatting with her, and she estimated about 1,000 units.
That was Isra Bloom from the Downtown Eastside SRO Collaborative. CFRO reached out to the Landlords BC, a party to the recent court proceedings, for comment on this amendment, but at the time this story goes to air, we have not heard back from them. This is Bernadine Fox reporting for The Pulse at Vancouver Co-op Radio and frequencynews.ca, with funding by the Local Journalism Initiative, a program of the Department of Canadian Heritage, and distributed by the Community Radio Fund of Canada.
I'm feeling misnet, got this weight on my back, the earth and the sea that I carry with me. I'm feeling it deep, right down to the core. My roots digging in and my waves on the shore. I am everything and nothing, everything and nothing. I feel like a mountain, got my head up high, with you on my shoulders, the light in the eyes. My shell opens up and I'm left there exposed. My driftwood bones, they will keep me afloat. I am everything. Back through times, we're calling the elders who carried us all. Like me with you now, my snack on my back, I carry you now. I am everything and nothing, everything and nothing. I am everything and nothing, everything and nothing. My day again is aligning with you. The one, my heart, the day again is aligning with you. Dig back through time, we're calling the elders who carried us all. Like me with you now, my snack on my back, I carry you now.
This is a CHOR News Update. 22 days into the VIU Palestine Solidarity Encampment at Vancouver Island University's Nanaimo campus, local authors hosted a literary festival to support the student protesters. On May 22nd, the Watermelon Seed Festival of Literature featured 7 novelists, poets, playwrights, and journalists, along with 3 student scholars, to demonstrate solidarity with the student protesters at the encampment. The encampment is located in the quad outside of the university's library. Warren Haiti is a professor at VIU and the coordinator of the festival. At the beginning of the event, he spoke to the crowd, explaining why the encampment started on May 1st. He says he's been able to learn a lot from the students associated with the encampment.
Some of us have been calling this encampment VIU's Graduate Center for Social Justice and Civic Engagement. And I've been learning a lot by hanging out with these impressive scholars. For over 7 months now, our undergraduate scholars have been working tirelessly and courageously to facilitate dialogue and to educate the university community. They are our university's moral and political leaders.
Sara Kishari is one of the student protesters who did a reading during the festival. She shares that as a Palestinian from Gaza, she has to focus her efforts here in Nanaimo, but also back in Gaza, where her family is.
The reaction from people as they overlook genocide and as they choose a more selfish, I would say, pathway is something that makes us lose faith in humanity. So thank you for showing up and thank you for being here for humanity.
She says the encampment's demands to VIU are the bare minimum.
We did it at an institution, an academic institution, because this is where people learn. This is where the highest level of education happens. And to ask for a statement of ceasefire, to ask for divestment from a genocide, and to ask for investigation of discriminating campus, that is the bare minimum that we can ask for.
She says those in encampment have been having conversations, educating themselves, and interacting with the community.
In terms of, you know, being there, maintaining the culture, and even engaging in acts of joy during these times is a big part of the resistance. For Palestinians, proving that we will still live on, having that motivation, is a big part of our resistance, and that has been a part of our life since we were born.
Kishawi says she chose to read from the book 10 Myths About Israel by Alon Pape to speak on the two-state solution. The two-state solution would see the establishment of an independent state of Palestine along with the state of Israel. She says for the last 7 months, members of the Palestinian Student Committee have been reading a lot about the idea around a one-state solution.
Because, and we often quote, that compromise between the oppressor and the oppressed, you know, maintains that there's an oppressor and an oppressed. You can't have a solution based on a compromise. So that we painted that on the Palestinians and how asking Palestinians to compromise in terms of having a two-state solution after the past 76 years is simply not the solution or a permanent peaceful solution at all.
The seven readings featured Karima Lowry, Joy Dubois, Sonnet LeBay, Robert Peppersmith, Jay Roziski, Craig Taylor, and Paul Watkins. The readers, many of whom are VIU faculty members, chose readings from their own work and from other books or poems that went along with the mission of the festival. The festival comes after an open letter from VIU staff and faculty was sent to the university on May 7th. The letter states their concerns about how VIU responded to the start of the encampment. The letter, which 105 members of VIU staff and faculty signed, stated that VIU administration cannot say they are supportive of the students' right to peaceful protest and freedom of assembly and expression, while also threatening extreme measures. The open letter states the notice sent out by VIU on May 2nd to those at the encampment stating they could face suspension, expulsion, or be prohibited from graduation and convocation celebrations undermines, quote, the exercise of those rights through the enforcement of policies and bylaws, unquote. CHOY obtained the notice given to those students, which was signed by Mark Egan, manager of Security Facility Services. In the notice, VIU also stated they have the right to request a peace officer to enforce measures authorized under the Trespassing Act, which could involve student arrest or removal of personal property from the VIU premises. In the open letter, it calls for VIU to retract the notice issued to the encampment and to commit to not using peace officers, police, or private security to intimidate any student protesters or to remove the encampment. It also calls on VIU to commit to not implementing any disciplinary actions against students exercising their rights to protest. As a May 23rd, VIU has not retracted the notice. At the end of the night, Haiti says he hopes to continue the Watermelon Seeds Festival of Literature and host a bigger and better one next year. For CHOY News, this is Laura McKenzie.
This report was made with the support of the Local Journalism Initiative, the Community Radio Fund of Canada, and listeners like you.
We keep turning it up, baby, turning it up. No.
I've been stressed, kinda obsessing over her and them. I move my body in between and feel them pressing in. They ask me what I like with eyes.
for the weekend, leaning into how I'm feeling, and I don't see it as a weakness, no. Oh, out and heavy with my breathing, not a second left for sleeping. There's a moment and we seize it, let's go. Oh. Some say keep it down, but they're not living it up. Your excuses and putting our love to the test. I'm getting your best. Some say calm, but they're not living it up, baby, living it up. Now some say turn it down, so we keep turning it up, baby, turning it up.
Don't be shy with me. Just lie with me, tell me all your fantasies.
Tell me all your fantasies.
Tell me that I'm all you need.
I'm all you need.
Baby, don't be shy with me.
Baby,
just lie with me, tell me all your fantasies. Tell me that I'm all you need.
Did you know that BC's natural ecosystem is one of the most biologically diverse regions in Canada? Indigenous communities have stewarded these lands for millennia and maintained a significant relationship with the natural world. Many of their practices, such as sustainable resource management and knowledge of ecological environments, continues to shape conservation efforts in this province. Come to the next Science World Spotlight on Wednesday, June 19th, between 6 and 9:30 p.m. for a thought-provoking panel discussion on the connections between Indigenous worldviews and contemporary environmental challenges. Head over to Science World's website to find out more.
Join me, Robin, every Friday at noon for Roots and Berries. Tune in to hear bluegrass, old-time music, and other rootsy little nuggets with a focus on Canadian players, singers, and pickers. That's Roots and Berries, Fridays over the noon hour, right here on CJSF 90.1 FM.